One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the Trampoline Hall podcast. I'm your host, Misha Globerman. Trampoline Hall, as you know, is a lecture series that takes place in a bar, usually in Toronto, sometimes in other cities. What happens is people get on stage and they give lectures on topics on which they are not professionally expert. They might be very smart. They might be really great people. They might know a lot about the thing, but it can't be their job to know about the thing that they are talking about. After each lecture, we take questions from the audience, and I do that. I run those questions. Me, Misha Globerman. I do it myself. This, of course, is the Trampoline Hall podcast, which means in every episode, we go back through the Trampoline Hall archives and bring you an amazing lecture from the past along with the Q&A. By the way, if you like this and you're in Toronto, you should come check out the show. It's great. Get on our mailing list, sign up, and we'll tell you when those shows are happening. But that is enough about this. Now is the time for this other thing. I will introduce to you this episode's podcast. The topic is The Porky Feast, and the lecturer is Laura Fisher.
Hello. Yeah. Hello, I'm going to talk to you tonight about a clandestine affair I've been carrying on for over 30 years, and the affair is with pork, or at least with the idea of pork. So I realize that it's pretty gross to admit that you have been attracted in an erotic way to the other white meat. But bear with me. Why do people have affairs in the first place? It's not that hard to figure out. Dalliances with the profane and the forbidden carry an erotic charge. And people want a taste of what's not being served for dinner. So to illustrate this idea, I'm going to read to you from a diary I kept in fifth grade. I forgot to bring the physical diary with me tonight, but it has troll dolls on the cover. It was 1993. And for some context, I had just moved across the country from a school where 100% of my classmates and friends were Jewish to a school where I was the only Jewish kid in my grade, possibly in the school. So like the world was opening up for me in a really exhilarating way. Okay, so here's direct evidence from the diary. February 18th, 1993. Yes. All caps. At school, me and five other kids are cooking a Viking feast, and it will be pork. Yummo. I'm in charge of making apple cake and rice pudding. Okay, February 25th. Tomorrow, we're cooking the porky feast. Yes. And then a whole page dedicated to a Star of David. February 26th, the next day. Today was so fun. The feast ruled. And then a week later, on March 1st, so it's days after the porky feast, but the event is still weighing heavily on my spirit. March 1st, school was okay. I had no pork at all at the feast, out of guilt, I suppose. Today I got bonked on the nose at gym. Ow. Julia wanted my phone number. I will never eat pork. Yuck. So just to do an on-the-spot close reading, we have initial attraction. We have the thrill of knowing that I was going to come face-to-face with the unknown and the forbidden. And then we have like an emotional whiplash of guilty refusal, followed by an extremely unconvincing promise to hold faith in the face of temptation. That's the yuck. So I grew up kosher, with an asterisk. My dad was Jewish, and my mom converted to Judaism when she married him. And so conversion was like a very big event in her life, one that kind of fractured some of her family relationships. And so she decided to really, really go for it. And when you become kosher, it's a way of marking conversion in a very material and concrete way, so much more concrete than like belief or devotion or something like that. So for most of my childhood, our home had two sets of dishes. One of them we used when we ate anything with meat, and then one of them we used when we had dairy, which is just anything without meat. All the meat that we ate in the house had to have a kosher stamp. It had to be slaughtered in a particular way in certain facilities. And so we couldn't eat pork or shellfish. We couldn't mix milk with meat in the same meal. Like, so you couldn't have a cheeseburger, or you couldn't have a turkey sandwich with a glass of milk. So, but of course, I still knew that all of these tasty foods existed because I watched television, and I'd seen how happy people looked when they bit into bacon. Like, I just really, really wanted to feel that. So vacations were the big opportunity that I had to get very, very close to the forbidden fruit. One time, my family was taking a trip in the Rocky Mountains. We were staying at a chalet. We went out for dinner one night, I was maybe 8 or 9, and we all ordered hamburgers, all 4 of us. And I really keenly remember the way that the waiter looked as he came to our table. He had all 4 plates of hamburgers on his arms, and he was like so proud of how beautiful they looked. He was like a peacock in full plumage, and he comes to our table, and then we noticed that they all had cheese on them and bacon. And so I was immediately crestfallen, because obviously my dad just immediately sent them back and asked that they be brought out again properly. And I also really remember the look on the waiter's face, which was like shock and bafflement and then disappointment and then something very much like sadness, which I myself started to feel. And, you know, obviously this was an honest mistake. We were in rural Alberta. But my dad really felt that, like, if you're talking about a food that billions of the world's population can't eat or won't eat because it's considered actually unclean, then it should be something that you at least double check about before you put on a person's plate. So he didn't feel badly at all. But again, like I said, we were in rural Alberta. I don't know how much you can really expect people to understand of the rules of kashrut or halal. And, you know, obviously what's taboo for some people is a food staple for lots and lots of other people. So another time, we were on vacation with my grandmother, and one morning she let us know that she was going to get up extra early, so we should eat breakfast without her and don't worry about her. And so we went downstairs to the dining room of the hotel, and there she was sitting at a table with her cup of coffee and a plate absolutely piled high with bacon. I was like, "What is this?" Totally shocked and scandalized. She was fully caught in the dirty deed. And when we went to her table, we're like, "Bubby, what's up?" She tried to convince us that the bacon had been brought to her by mistake. But it was a buffet. So then that's where I started to realize that what they told me at school wasn't necessarily what was happening in reality. But the thing about being kosher is that almost everyone cheats, like everyone at least that I knew broke the rules. And in my own family, as my brother and I came towards high school and graduating high school, my parents started to bend the rules in a major way. So like we could order pepperoni pizza, but we had to eat it on paper plates on the living room floor. We couldn't eat it even at the kitchen table. Or they might order shrimp at a restaurant, but they would feel very, very badly and like talk about their guilt for the entire meal as like penance. But it doesn't mean that the boundaries are gone. So like my mom, for instance, she might eat sausages at my house or at a restaurant, but she would never cook them in her own home. And the really important thing is that going whole hog stays off the table. Like for her, I think at this point, she no longer needs to go to great lengths to prove that her identity is authentic and meaningful, but she's not willing to totally relinquish the system that gave structure to her life and like oriented her family in Canadian culture. But at the same time, when I try to explain this stuff to friends, it seems bizarre and very arbitrary to them, right? Like, why would you follow the rules sometimes but not always? Why would you follow arcane rules that are very challenging to follow in the first place if you don't actually believe in them or even know necessarily where those rules stemmed from or what they mean? I mean, why would you observe in this kind of illogical or haphazard way? So it turns out that looking for a logical explanation for these dietary restrictions is kind of a moot point. So here I need to give you just a very brief explainer on the pork prohibition. So very brief. In order to be kosher, a mammal needs to have two things. It needs to have cloven hoofs, like a split hoof, which pigs do have. And they also need to chew their cud, which pigs don't do. And chewing your cud is, like, to my understanding, when an animal does a throw-up burp and then swallows it. So they eat their meal two times. That's what I have gathered from my researches. So you might ask, what is so wrong with not chewing your cud? But the Bible does not say. When the prohibition shows up in Deuteronomy, there's no explanation. It just simply says, you will not eat these unclean animals. And then it lists a bunch of not appetizing animals, but pigs are one of the animals it lists. And then I learned in my research for this talk that in the Talmud, which is a religious text that collects the writings of rabbis over thousands of years, in the Talmud, the mandate to keep kosher is explicitly named as one that is like supra-rational or non-rational, something beyond rationality or logic altogether. And it's actually part of a whole category of commandments which are defined by the fact that Gentiles consider them illogical and in fact deserving of mockery. That's a whole category of commandments. And Jews are supposed to follow those commandments because God tells you to do so. And you're not supposed to ask why. The question why is not really part of the commandment structure here. And so it's kind of like a because I said so logic that passes down from parent to child. And so to me, if kosher laws are illogical or they're not responsive to rational questioning, that's not why they exist, then it actually makes sense to me that people implement them in a very piecemeal and kind of random way, in the way that my family and most families I grew up with do. I think the point is rather to have some kind of a system for structuring your life and defining your identity. And in fact, my parents didn't actually bring God into it almost at all as an explanation for why we were following these rules. They had goals that were much more secular and that were much more modern, which was that my brother and I would feel a sense of belonging and distinction at the same time. And they created these material barriers that would constantly be reminding us that we were not completely in step or part of the Christian mainstream, and they hoped that that would tell us who we were every day as we were living. And it just so happens that I was a person who hotly desired BLTs, and they couldn't have predicted that. So now, many years later, I don't have any guilt about eating unclean animals. In fact, I feel more concerned about eating animals in the first place. Like, the ethics of that, I think, are much, for me at least, much more pressing. But the plot twist is that I married into a family with a Muslim dad and a Jewish mom. And so the pork prohibition has returned with a vengeance. And what I've observed from being part of a Jewish-Muslim power couple, non-believing, is that, from my observations at least, Muslims are not fucking around with pork at all. Like, there's not the maybe I'll eat it on paper plates or, like, maybe I'll eat it on a Saturday. There's just not eating it. And so my husband will eat whatever he wants in his regular life, but when we're around his dad, he fully fronts like he would never eat pork, ever. And I also front, like, I also completely, like, oh yes, I'll get chicken on my pizza, sounds great. It's like, but it's a lie of omission that we're happy to commit, and, you know, for the sake of respect. And so I also wonder what our daughter is going to lie to us about, because she's just over a year old, so she's not doing a ton of lying yet. But, you know, the experiences and the objects that we offer her define the whole parameters of her existence right now. So pork defines identity for so many people, but for her it's just another food that she eats. And so I wonder, you know, it's possible that she'll grow older and she'll feel cheated, you know, because you know, there are all these religious and cultural rituals that we didn't introduce her to or that we didn't keep her from. And so maybe she'll feel actually cheated that she didn't have any of those kinds of prohibitions or decrees to help orient her. And she had nothing to rebel against, basically. But for now, though, we are the ones, my husband and I, who tell her who she is and what the world is about, where she fits into it. And this feels like a very enormous responsibility. I think most parents feel that. But the one thing I know for sure is that she is absolutely forbidden to celebrate Christmas.
Nora Fisher, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Trampoline Hall Podcast. I'm Misha Goldman. Up next, the Q&A.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Are there any questions? All the way in the back of the room. Yes, yes.
Do you remember the first time you had bacon?
Or anything else?
Well, let's start.
Obviously, it was bacon.
It was bacon, right? You weren't like...
Yes.
Right.
I don't remember the specific time. I think I probably pretended I had to go to the bathroom and on vacation at a hotel, and then like snuck into the, lifted up the silver thing and like grabbed.
Do you remember was it as good as you thought it would be?
Yeah.
Yeah, bacon's really good, man. Right? Like everybody, for if you're kosher, also if you're vegetarian, I've heard vegetarian stew often like, well, but bacon.
Yeah.
It's like the one thing. It's like amazing. It's so good. So that was it. So did that answer questions? She stole it. She pretended to go to the bathroom. She stole it. The story is apocryphal, but has an ecstatic truth to it. Anything else? Yes, yes.
What did your father-in-law think of your daughter eating pork?
What does your father-in-law think of your daughter
he
eating pork?
He has no idea that she eats it. Are you kidding me? No way.
Yeah.
He'll never know. No.
And is your next? And what's it worth for you for it to stay that way? I think people can be trusted here, right? So is no one going about to tell your father-in-law? Is that something you can? All right, so there we go. So that will remain secret.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'm sorry to turn that into a threat. I don't know why. That's like the God of the Old Testament, like vengefulness in me, I think.
Thank you.
Anything else you would like to know? Yes, back over there.
What was the greatest length you went to hide your consumption of pork?
Awesome, yeah.
To hide it. You know, I think the thing is that once I started eating it, I don't think I really hit it that much. I could never order it if my parents were paying up until, you know, like at a restaurant as a kid, I could never order it. But I think it all happened away from them and out of the sight of people who would condemn it. And so I think it just double life. I think it was just a double life.
just a double life of like being an adult, basically, where it's like
yeah.
You can do things like if you're not around
right.
Your parents, you do it. And now I lost track. I'm sorry. Do you eat pork around your parents now?
Yes, I do.
You do. Mm-hmm. And so when did that flip? When does that change?
I think at a certain point when my brother and I were teenagers, I think my parents looked at each other and were like, okay, they're done. Like
they're as Jewish as we need them to be.
And they're less and less so every day. So
There's no
stopping this train.
Okay, yeah. All right, cool. So there you go. Yes. Anything else you would like to know? Any other questions? Yes, over there, yes. You're thinking of Little Miss Piggy or Little Miss Piggy, as you affectionately call her, yeah.
As like sexualized.
She's sexy.
Yeah. Universally.
So do you think pork is universally eroticized, as instantiated by that hot pig who dated Kermit, Little Miss Piggy?
You know what? That's a really good question. Can you imagine if Miss Piggy were a cow? Like, Miss Cow? Like, it just wouldn't... Yeah, I think there's something there. Yeah.
I don't feel that what makes the Myths Piggy character work is that our culture thinks of pigs as fundamentally sexy. I don't think that's what's going on there.
What do you think? What do you think? The clothing?
I don't know. I guess I think part of the joke is that pigs aren't sexy, but she's like this, like, hotsy-totsy pig, even though it's not as sexy. So maybe I'm saying too much about what I think about pigs and hotsy-totsiness in general, and I should just step back a little bit, but I don't know.
There's a jolliness to her sexiness, which is very pig-like.
We can agree that she's hot, for sure. Okay. Yes, over there, yeah. I don't think we answered your question, but I just got nervous. So, yeah, we'll go over here. What's that?
How else did you rebel?
How else did you rebel is the question.
Tatum. Well...
What did you say?
Her name.
Oh, her name. I thought it was like a new swear word that you... Tatum was your name. Okay.
How else did I rebel?
Do you mean against Jewishness specifically or generally? Just generally? Both. Okay.
You know, like the classic drug... I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know, the trifecta of bad things that everyone does.
Gambling.
It is. I have a clean-cut answer for you. My parents are classical musicians, and so I played violin as a child, and they very much wanted me to pursue that or take it more seriously than I did. And I think the big rebellion was when I quit violin and took up guitar.
What kind of guitar did you play?
What kind of guitar?
Yeah, was it like, what did you play? Was it like rock and roll electric guitar, or did you take like a classical nylon string guitar?
It was an electric acoustic, so it could be plugged in.
Oh, that's
but it
that's
had the
so
chunkiness
much like
of an
eating
acoustic.
The bacon on your, it's like it can kind of go either way, right? Because it's like the acoustic guitar is sort of close enough, but
yeah.
Then you can...
You're learning a lot about me.
Yeah, yeah. Sly. Okay, good. All right, good. So does that answer your question? All right, yeah, that tells us a lot. Okay, yes, over here, yeah. So the Master of None episode where Aziz Ansari eats pork in front of his parents, we were assuming that you've seen it, and given that you'd have, what are your thoughts on the episode?
It's been a while, but I think I remember thinking, cool, there's an episode of television about this. Like, I think that's all I can remember. I think I liked it. Did something bad happen in it?
No,
everything is tarnished in my memory now. I can't...
So for me, it was very, I was like, this is really rude that you would do this in front of your parents. And I felt like it prompted a lot of conversation amongst my friend group. So I was wondering if you had any.
I mean, I think the only reason that I ate unkosher things around my parents was because they did too. Probably if they themselves hadn't started slacking, then I would have been a good daughter to the end. But because they broke, I broke.
So better than that Aziz Ansari character. Yes. It's still more, because he does it just without...
Yeah, he's like sick of pretending because he's an adult now.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, there you go. So, over there. Yes, yeah, sure.
So, how would you react if your daughter's future act of rebellion was embracing orthodoxy?
What if your daughter becomes an orthodox Muslim Jew? Is that, if she embraces some form of orthodoxy and that's her act of rebellion, how would you feel about that?
I would support her in any of her decisions as long as no one gets harmed. Unlikely to happen, though.
Wait, unlikely that she'll make decisions that won't harm anyone, you mean? she's 2 years old, but you already sense that, like, harm. When you already sense that harm coming up in her, is that the...
No, I feel like she has a deviance about her. I don't see her going that way.
She was one?
She's 14 months. She's got a personality. Yeah.
She has a deviance? What is that?
Cheerfully, like, cutely.
Okay, all right. So you feel like already, oh, she's a rule breaker?
Yeah,
and she's going to harm people. Because that was the question. Is that?
I would just be surprised, but anything could happen, and I would support her.
Oh, so obviously, you would be surprised if she became Orthodox.
Yes,
not
I
if
would.
She, I see. I'm sorry. Okay, yeah. All right. So, okay, but you would support her. Okay, so there you go. Does that answer your question? Are you happy with the answer? Sure, okay, good.
We'll talk later.
Yes, back there. Yeah, back there.
Do you remember anything else about the Porky Feast?
So I had just moved to this school maybe a month before. I was pretty much just like speed dating all the girls in class, like trying to figure out who's going to be my best friend. And I think I just remember that I was happy with the girls who were in my group. That's all I remember. But I don't remember, obviously I wrote that I was too guilty or I felt bad or I decided not to. I don't really, I don't remember that feeling happening in me. I just relearned of it when I read the diary.
Did you, was it called, was the Porky Feast the name you gave it or the name that it had? Okay, it wasn't
no,
called
it was,
the Porky
it was
Feast.
No, like it was part of a unit on Vikings, so I think it had a
it was
social
called
science.
A Viking Feast.
It was called a Viking Feast.
But you were
feast.
Like, oh, this is the Porky Feast.
Yeah.
And do you think that the other kids knew, do you know if the other kids knew that that was like a big deal for you? Were they like, oh, the Jewish girl's going to eat pork? No, that was just
no,
like a private adventure that
no,
you were having.
No, that was totally just inside. Yeah. Cool. No, when you're a new kid, you don't need to tell everyone all your stuff. You can
yeah,
just
I guess
pretend
that would be
to be.
I have completely yeah. misunderstood, especially called what like childhood is like. Okay,
yeah,
guys,
yeah.
I'm really different. Yeah, that's not like, not anyone's yeah. strategy. Okay.
No.
So does that tell you what you know about the Porky Feast? Sure, it does. Yes, over there, yes.
Why does meat and cheese inhalable high as bacon?
Why does what? He's like, why doesn't anyone talk about the meat and dairy prohibition? Why does bacon get all the press? Is that your question? Right, you're like, that's pretty, right. So why, do you think there's a reason for that?
Because it would kind of entail, like, just really wanting to have a glass of milk with your dinner. Like, it isn't, it's not a desire that I think a lot of people strongly feel. I could be wrong. I think it's just, it's less flashy. And it's just less desirable. And also, I can't remember why that prohibition exists. It has something to do with like laying in mother's milk,
it
maybe.
You, it says you don't cook
no.
a calf in the milk of its mother. That's
yeah.
The, I'm here for the Talmudic editions. Just
got
for,
it.
Whenever you're missing anything about the Talmud, the Kabbalah, that's sort of my main function
yeah.
here. Yeah, don't boil
Thank
a calf
you.
In the
milk Rabbi
of its mother.
Misha.
Yeah, there
yeah.
you go. So there, that's why.
I don't know. I think it's just less. It doesn't speak to desire in the same way that bacon does.
Right, because don't eat a pig. He's like, I want to eat a pig. But
yeah.
You're like, I didn't want to boil a calf in the milk of its mother anyhow. why would I want to do that?
Never crossed my
but
mind.
But I look at a lobster and I'm like,
exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Who else? Yes, over there. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, sure.
What aspects of Jewishness do you still hold?
Oof. Okay. Well,
guilt.
I think there are certain like cultural personality traits that I have and that I appreciate in others. Misha, do you agree?
that you appreciate Jewishness?
That they exist,
sure, yeah.
That they exist.
Oh, you mean that there are?
Yeah, that there are.
Jewish, sure, people are Jewish.
Senses
I mean,
of humor.
The,
okay.
Yeah.
He's not going to help me.
That's where the word comes from.
Are there
Jewish. That's what they're talking about, yeah.
I'm interested in Jewish history. I'm interested in Jewish labor history. I like to pick the parts of Jewish history that best serve my sense of self today.
Do you think of yourself as like religious in some way now? Because being kosher is like a sign of not just being, not just like, whatever, liking sarcastic jokes, but it's a sign normally of being in some ways connected to the religion. Do you mm-hmm. feel connected to like the religion as opposed to just like the cultural identity? Like does the...
I mean, I grew up going to synagogue every week, so right. there are certain melodies, you know, like when I hear them, I feel connected to them.
Right.
I'm not religious in the least, so
okay.
no.
All right, so no. So that cultural connection, but not the religious connection.
Well, the lucky thing about being Jewish, and I think probably other religions too, but I can't speak for them, is that you can literally believe in nothing and like practice nothing and still be like, I'm that, it's me. You know, you can still... You can still have that identity or feel part of the culture without any of the
yeah, that
actual
is the lucky
practice.
Thing. That is the, when you started that sentence, I was like, but you don't hear the lucky thing about being Jewish. Is that? It's not, but it's true. That is the lucky thing about being Jewish.
Yeah.
No one ever talks about the luck of the Jewish, but that's what it is. That's
for, I don't know
for
what
reasons
media
that should
you're
be
reading.
Obvious. But yeah. Any other question? Any? Yeah. Yeah. Back there. Yeah. Did you get what frustrated with your parents? Oh, did their inconsistency frustrate you? Were you like, hey, like, was that frustrating for you?
Well, they didn't become inconsistent until I think they trusted that we were old enough to understand why. So when I was little, they were fully consistent. Like, they were very strict for quite a while. It wasn't until I was maybe 15 or 16. And by then, we all kind of, like, broke together, so I had no problem with it. Yeah, I think if I had seen, you know, I was so shocked to see my grandmother being inconsistent. I was like, but the ancestors, they're why we do this. And that was
that's the real tradition.
Shocking.
That to me is like, for me, like when you think about like the Jewish identity, I didn't grow up kosher at all, but in the world in which I grew up, like when, if you care about the cultural identity, for me, that's what the cultural identity is. It's to have a set of plates for milk and for meat and then a set of plates for Chinese food. That's like separate.
Yeah.
That like, you're like, yeah, yeah, and those don't go together and that's how we do. And that's almost like, it's almost, to me, it's like, if you're thinking of the cultural tradition, the contemporary one, it's almost more authentic, right? That like the cheating's built into it. And like they say, the guilt is built into it too. It's like all one beautiful system of guilty pork deliciousness.
Clearly, I feel connected to that.
Yeah, 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 for sure. Anything else? Any other questions? Anything else you'd like? Yes, over there,
In your post-pork prohibition phase, did you ever convince others to turn to the dark side?
Did you actually get to the point of not just eating pork, but trying to get other Jews, or let's say Muslims, to eat pork? Is that, that's awesome. Yeah, like super pork.
No, I never have. Nope.
Consider it?
I would not.
Why do you ask this question? So you're a Jew who specifically tries to get other Jews to eat cheeseburgers? Is that your, like, that's your, like...
I was the enabler, but I wasn't convincing her, but I was there.
But you were there, and was that kind of happy? Were you like, yes?
I was like, I've done it, you can do it too.
So you can do it too. Well, that's, I think that, I like that you consider that not to be convincing, to be like, here, come do this. That's convincing. I mean, I'm convinced. I would, but yeah, that, okay. So you haven't done that, but he has... I don't know. I don't know what the question is there. Would you, does that seem like an appealing thing for you to try to?
I mean, even as you, when you were a kid, you're like, oh, you should eat bacon.
Or even as a kid, were you like to other Jewish kids, like, oh, you should eat bacon?
I don't think I ever did, actually. No.
Oh, there you go. What about
such
when you were
innocent?
When you were at the Jewish school, did you eat? Did you eat no pork at all when you were at the Jewish school?
No.
So did no one eat pork at the Jewish school?
No one.
Wow, no one ate pork. No one ate pork in the whole Jewish school.
Well, probably secretly. In their families,
but
they
as,
were.
But as you know, if there was no, no one was like, hey, let's go behind the school. I got a Slim Jim. Like no one was like.
No. In fact, the school had catered meals that we ate. We couldn't bring food from home into the school, so no one's home food or like home meals were part of the day. Like
wow.
We didn't bring our own lunches or anything because they knew that you couldn't actually mandate that people be kosher if you let people bring food from home.
Sure. Right,
we didn't see each other's home food that much. It was.
Right. Okay. So there you go. So no, she hasn't. She's not about to start. It's morally questionable what you're doing.
I never said that.
Anything else? Any other questions? Oh, that's all the way over there. Yeah, yeah.
Do you still support your daughter? She's really, really into business.
You still support what?
Do you still support your daughter? And she, like, one day got really, really
into business?
Christmas.
I'm sorry. I can never tell the two apart. The question is, would you support your daughter if she got into Christmas?
Well, I mean, she's definitely going to, right? Like, yeah. I don't think it's going to be avoidable. So.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Would I support? I don't know. We're really stressed about
it. Got to figure it out.
We don't know what to do at all.
She wants a tree, Santa Claus. Maybe she wants a little Jesus in there, too. A little Jesus.
Yeah.
She's like, she wants both on the tree.
I think we'll just do, give lots of presents for the holidays that we will celebrate by having a dinner and giving presents. But that's obviously going to happen. It'll be difficult.
Have you ever seen an actual child?
I know.
Like, they are really into Santa Claus.
They love it.
Santa Claus is very important.
They love it.
Yeah.
I know.
So you don't have no sense of what you're going to do?
I don't know. I see myself in this one specific way, actually becoming my parents, which is like, no, absolutely not. You will not. It's like the last, for me personally, it's like the last thing to fall. That
it's such like a beautiful image of what parenting is, which is, I just want to point out that a mere 6 minutes ago, you were like, I will support my daughter in whatever belief she holds, as long as it doesn't hurt anyone. And then someone's like, what about perhaps, I don't know, the most popular good-natured belief that children hold that brings them more joy than anything else in our culture? You're like, well, that's where I draw the line.
If you put it that way, I can't really justify it.
No, it's a
gut feeling.
Yeah,
we'll see.
No, for sure. We'll all right. Well, you know, we'll come back and see. Yes, yes, ma'am. Did you want Christmas?
I did, yeah. Yeah.
You did?
I did, but most of my friends didn't have it, so it wasn't a thing where I was going to school and people were talking about it. Like, no one was really talking about it, so it didn't feel like I was missing out, but I wanted it anyway because I watched TV.
What about when you went to the Gentile school, though? Presumably they were having the Gentile school. That's still, like, my Jewish education coming up. Like, I picture a big, so it's like, you know, Toronto School for Goyim. You know, it's like, that's not what they just called it school. But did they must have had Christmas. Did you feel?
They had Christmas. I think at that point I snapped into kind of, like, the beginnings of what would become my countercultural identity, which was like, no, I don't celebrate that. I don't want to.
Oh, right.
I have other stuff that I'm into.
So it's not because I'm Jewish, because I'm like goth or whatever.
Is
that like the
I'm Christmas is so not goth.
It's even more not goth than not Jewish. It's true. So for you, it was just like you were just enough of a teenager that you could just ignore Christmas.
Yeah, just like and quickly became a teenager and just was too cool for it anyway or whatever.
Too cool for Christmas. Okay, so there you go. So went from too Jewish for Christmas.
You guys are
cool
making me so anxious about Christmas.
You should be very. I have a little boy, and I don't care a lot about being Jewish, but I care a lot about being atheist. And when he comes home and he's like, Daddy, what about the invisible man in the sky who's going to bring me presents if I'm good with a beard? I'm like, like it's like oh, you've taken like everything that's wrong with religion and everything that's wrong with like commercial culture, put them into one person, and made that be the most important person in childhood. It is difficult.
Yeah, and then you have to be the bad guy.
Sorry?
Then you have to be the bad guy.
I do have to be
or
the
not.
Bad guy.
I don't know.
I'm the bad guy. Anything else? Any other questions before I move on? Anything else? I think you know what? I think normally there's a rule. I don't know. In the business, you say you try to end just on a note against Santa Claus, and I think we've done that nicely. So we'll wrap it up there. Please welcome Laura Fisher.
Thank you.
Trampoline Hall was created in Toronto in the 21st century by Sheila Hetty and is hosted by me. This episode's lecture was chosen by Emily M. Keeler and Charles Yao. The podcast is produced by Josh Block. Our theme music was composed by Matt Smith. Our coordinating producer is Kate Bars. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. If you enjoyed the podcast, you can really help us out by leaving a rating and review on iTunes. It helps a lot. I'm Misha Globerman. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.